This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I'm your co-host, Andrew Reich. Now, I don't have a special guest co-host because we're actually back. It's me and Adam back. It's going to be Adam Murray. How you doing?
I'm doing good. That's right. I'm back. I've been to Finland. I've been to Austria. I've been to Estonia. I have checked out the minor leagues. I have all the info on the latest goalies, all your centers, all your wingers.
Wingers? Wingers, what they call them, wings in the NBA. What are you talking about?
This isn't the NHL team podcast.
What's the NHL?
We're not doing hockey.
Adam is making the joke, little joke there. He has been off for about a week or so in Finland, Austria, Estonia. He's traveled the world, I guess you could say, in negative 30 degree weather. But how was your trip, Adam? For those who are curious, maybe the five or six people who are curious.
The trip was good. It was very cold. It hit negative 30 up in the Arctic Circle. Nobody cares about basketball at all. Saw some hockey. Crowds are way into sports, way more than they are here. It's actually fun to watch it out there.
Well, let me ask you this, because we were talking on our last episode about the media platforms and such. Were you able to access really any of the NBA basketball while you were overseas?
No, they have they have a couple of satellite stations like Eurosport, and I can't think of the other ones right now, but basically, right now, they're the African Soccer Championship qualifying is going on. So they showed that live, and they showed some pool. They had some Nordic ski jumping. The only thing I saw the Patriots at an Irish bar a day later. So it's just like American sports, you know, they're on at like 4 a.m. there. So nobody's up and watching it. And then soccer is more important out there. So it's just all soccer.
Soccer is
all the
big
time.
In the Nordic regions, the cold regions, too?
Well, Sweden has a good women's team. I know that much.
The Netherlands have a great team.
Netherlands have a great team. It's big up there just because that's what they all do. And hockey, you know, I saw the Russian league goes on TV a lot, the Finnish league. I saw a couple Swedish games, you know, but it's just like there's no talk of basketball because, you know, it's just all hockey.
There's only so many Petteri Kapanen fans that you can locate in Finland.
I searched, you asked me for a Drew Gooden Finland jersey. I couldn't find one. I went looking, but I tried.
You tried. Well, you did mention the Patriots. Obviously, for the people who will be listening to this podcast, thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed Super Bowl 49 between the New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks. And you talked about you're obviously talking about the AFC Championship game between New England and Indianapolis. That's the game that you saw in Finland out in some bar?
Yep.
So obviously we know that the subject, because we're not going to really try to delve too much into, you know, the football side of things, because that's up to, you know, TJ and Todd for the college football and Scott and Dr. G for the extra point. They'll take care of you there, and Roger Morissette and his gang. But obviously the big story there was about the deflated balls, the deflated footballs that the Patriots were supposedly conspiring to do. There's really no proof there such as to what Roger Goodell is saying, so we don't really know too much just yet, even though I think everybody has already made up their minds in the public consciousness that the Patriots are cheating. I did want to ask you this, just kind of try to transition that over with the NBA and maybe the sport of basketball. Have you ever played basketball with a deflated ball?
I've played with a deflated ball. I've played with a dead court. It's almost impossible. It's just like, all right, we're just going to play past the ball. No, don't even bother dribbling. It's near. Well, near impossible.
The reason I bring it up is because just to kind of bring it over to this side of things is, do you think there's a real advantage in having a deflated basketball, even though both teams are going to be handling the same ball in continuous motion?
No, there's no advantage because it's a disadvantage for both teams. It takes more. You're not going to get the bounce on any bounce pass you want. You're just going to be passing it to everybody's ankles.
But you know what the one advantage is, and I've noticed this, because when I was a kid, you know, sometimes I'd forget to pump my ball and it would be deflated. Like, it would literally be curling. Like, I could literally see the surface curling. That's how deflated it would be. And I would just say, ah, fuck it, I'll just play.
Yeah, you have a softer rim. That's about it, but...
That's exactly what I was going to say. When you get it to the rim, it sort of dies. So it doesn't just, like, ricochet off of the glass. It kind of just settles, and it's easier to get it through the net that way. Outside of that, I don't know of any advantages. Layups are terrible because they never bounce off.
I wouldn't even think it's an advantage because shooters just rely on their rhythm, and their rhythm will be off because the ball pressure is different and it'll weigh different than the shot's going to be because they're not used to it.
I'm glad you mentioned that. That's the other part. Shooting on a deflated ball is so much harder because, you know, when you look at a still shot of an NBA player or any highly skilled basketball player, when they're holding the ball and they're cocking it back, it's usually at the base of their wrist. When they're letting it go, it's at the edge of their fingertips. So, you know, that's how the motion goes. You flick it, it goes from the wrist, and then it goes through the fingertips. And obviously with a deflated ball, can it rest easier on your wrist with a deflated ball? Sure. Or a ball with less air. But when it comes to, like, getting that finger over it, you're not going to get the same type of, like, resistance, and that it's going to screw up the entire trajectory. You're going to get no backspin on it. And, you know, backspin is not your friend with a deflated ball because it's not going to go anywhere.
So basically you're saying we should watch out for Vegas if somebody bets a ton of money on the under?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Maybe in college basketball they're playing with deflated balls, you know? You know what's funny about it? It's like Tim Duncan. Everybody wonders why he does that. That's his routine. At the beginning of every game, the referee gives Duncan the ball. He tests the air pressure just to see if it's a good ball. And I've seen a couple times where he'll toss a ball and say, I don't like that one. Give me another one. And then he'll test that one and say, that's good. You know, so it's not like like I said, because both teams handle the same ball unless it gets kicked out of bounds and you have to get a new one. There's no advantage for one team over the other to get a deflated ball in basketball because they're both going to be using it. But, you know, I just wanted to talk about that a little bit because of the fact that, you know, all the Deflategate stuff is still up in the air about – even after the Super Bowl, they're still going to be talking about this up there.
Yeah, but that's probably the best thing is I didn't have to hear any of that. It was nice and quiet on the sports front. I'd have to be inundated with all that garbage.
Yeah, so now we talked about a little bit about deflated balls and stuff. Now, let me tell you something. I don't care if he had a deflated ball. I don't care if he had an overinflated ball. I don't care if he had a beach ball. I don't care if he had a fucking bowling ball. Klay Thompson, I think the Friday before last, absolutely hit fire. Did you catch this highlight?
No, but I read about it, and he's just not missing anything anymore.
He scored 37 points in the third quarter against the Sacramento Kings at home. Included like 11 three-point shots, which was like one short of the NBA record. I mean, the Warriors are obviously on fire as it is. We'll talk about them a little bit more, but I mean, just speak to how great Thompson has been.
Oh, and I was the one who said he was overrated. So this is there's really not much you can say. And in the last 10 games, he's been averaging 26 points. I don't know how he's just so on fire, like just day in, day out all of a sudden. Yeah, Sacramento, 11 for 15 from 3, 52 points, followed that up with 31 and a 30.
You know what's crazy about the third quarter? Because, I mean, that also speaks to kind of like the power of the social media through the NBA, like we were talking about earlier in that previous podcast, is that you know something's happening when all of a sudden you look at Twitter, you look at Facebook, and you just see like, oh my God, Klay Thompson. Or, oh, Klay Thompson is lighting up. You need to check this out. And it almost became like appointment viewing. Like everybody in the Twitter was just going crazy. And it turns into NBA Jam. You tune in and he's just making. And everybody is, by the time you get to the end of the game, the entire world is watching. The whole sports world is watching it.
I remember last year, Gerald Green was on fire, and he had like 30 or 40 points. I'm like, well, oh, I need to tune into ESPN to see Gerald Green because he's on fire.
Yeah, but how did you find that out? On Twitter?
On Twitter. Okay. And it was just like, he's hitting everything. You got it. Like, okay, I'll tune in. And I don't really – nobody wants to see Gerald Green anymore. He's, you know, he's good, and he's, you know, getting his time there in Phoenix. But you know, with social media, you're watching somebody on fire. It's just something you're not going to see that in other sport.
Yeah, and YouTube was one I chased down immediately on Saturday morning just to see, like, okay, what did this really just happen? And when you watch the highlight, you realize he scored the first points of the third quarter 3 minutes in, which means he scored 37 points within a matter of 9 minutes, which is ungodly. Like, that's not even fair. Was this more exciting than those 60-point performances by LeBron and Carmelo last year?
No, because they're all different. LeBron and Carmelo, they're also doing, you know, layups and jumpers. Klay was just shooting, you know, he was just shooting jump shots for the most part. Mm-hmm. He was just on fire from long range, I think. And
you saw the one where he went to the corner, he didn't even get a screen, and he just hurls it and it goes in?
Yeah, it was just one of those things, like, even he knew it was happening, and they're all unique, and that's the fun thing about it. Like, you're not going to be like, oh my God, Drew Brees is 20 for 20 with 5 touchdowns. You got to tune in. No, nobody's going to tune into that. Or NBA is just unique in that. You know, maybe baseball, oh, he has a no-hitter. Wait 2 hours to see if he gets through the next 3 innings.
Well, it's like kind of like what we were talking about with Deflategate. It's continuous. You know, you can't stop a guy who's on fire. You know, he's just going to keep heat checking until he misses. You know,
yeah.
And with Drew Brees or football or baseball, I mean, there's a long stretch there where that player's not going to be on the field for a certain amount of time to do what he does. In basketball, you can't stop a guy. I mean, they're just going to give him the ball every time until you can do something about it. And for Klay in that game,
yep,
they just couldn't
and
stop him.
That's why we love the NBA.
And that's why we love the NBA, and everybody else is loving the Golden State Warriors now. They did hit a bit of a snag. They lost 2 games in a row. They lost in a great game in overtime to the Chicago Bulls at home. It was only their second home loss of the season. And then they turned around and they went on the road to Utah and lost at Utah. So right now they're at 36-8. You know, they only have 2 home losses. One of them was just recently against the Chicago Bulls. They had a great game that went into overtime. Then they followed up, went to Utah, and lost to Utah for reasons I can't figure out. They must have just had a lull.
They just took an off game. After that big loss to Chicago, you're like, oh, it's the Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't care.
So, and the other thing, too, I want to mention to everybody is that the last time the Warriors – here's been the trajectory with the Warriors is that they lost 2 in a row to the Suns and the Spurs. You know what they did right after that? They went on a 16-game winning streak. Then they had a loss to Memphis. They lost 2 in a row to the Lakers, how I don't know, and the Clippers on Christmas Day. Then they went on an 8-game winning streak. So, I mean, just because they lost 2 in a row doesn't mean they're, like, in dire straits for sure. They still have the best record in the Western Conference by, like, a country mile. So,
they're done, just like Cleveland was done because they lost 1 game. They got a 3-game lead in the West right now, and I don't see that shrinking anytime soon. Everybody's going to, you know, you tend to play down to bad competition. Like, oh, we could sort of rest. Utah stuck one in. Oh, that does – it's not – in the end, it's not going to be the main difference. Oh, because they have 2 losses in a row again.
Mm-hmm.
They're just – you know, you can't be on fire every day. You're not going to win – you're not going to be 72 wins again.
Yeah. I mean, 72 wins, it's just – obviously, it's not going to be possible this time with the 8 losses between them and the other team in the East. That's on absolute – on a torrid run, the Atlanta Hawks. We'll get to them in a second because I feel like they share a few similarities, even though they play very different types of games. With the Warriors, though, Steph Curry was an all-star on the starting roster. Klay Thompson was a reserve, rightfully so. Their point differential is around 11 points, which is one of the best of all, which is one of the best ever. Steve Kerr is going to coach the All-Stars for the Western Conference. So everything's looking up for the Golden State Warriors. And you said earlier this season, you know, they're on fire, but the problem is they're on fire. You know, because anytime that fire can go out and all of a sudden they hit a lull at the wrong time. Do you think that that's quite possible for either the Warriors or the Atlanta Hawks?
I would say more so for Atlanta, because let's say they lose one of their pieces, their bench is awfully shaky, and okay, yes, you have a 7-game lead, but what happens when the playoffs come and teams are going to get physical and you're not going to have time to take all those open shots you have? Do you think Chicago is just going to let Atlanta shoot around them? No, Noah's going to knock them down, and Butler's going to be playing D. They're not just going to be like, eh, let's run up and down.
The one advantage, though, for Atlanta compared to Golden State is that their scoring defense is very good. They're, like, one of the best in the league. So it's the thing that's tough about Atlanta is if they're running really good offense like they have all of January and most of December, for that matter, and you're not able to get easy baskets on them, then it makes life really difficult, because now they're scoring 110 points or maybe 107 points and you're struggling to get to 100, you know, and that's how the Hawks have won a lot of their games. Just highly efficient offense. Don't make mistakes. Just keep the game going your way. You know, I've been getting bombarded, and, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the Atlanta sports fan base, I'm not going to lie, but I've been getting bombarded with, you know, guys like Todd Gessling, Nick Duke, Chad Campbell, all members of the Place to Be Nation. You can read their stuff and listen to their stuff on all their different shows. And they are just loving on this Atlanta Hawks team. Do you think this is more of a bandwagon fan situation, or do you think there's a little bit of context to Atlanta's popularity in terms – and just the nation in general, because of the fact that they've garnered so many headlines?
I don't want to say it's a bandwagon thing, because Atlanta does have some loyal fans. They really don't deserve it. But there's a lot of just – Atlanta is one of the more apathetic sports towns, as implicit by teams leaving left and right. And, you know, the whole scandal before about how do we get people to come in.
Yeah.
It's just those who are loyal but there's no – you know, I would say it's bandwagoning to an extent, because, oh, now they're 118, let's go show up. Well, where were you the last 20 years when the arena's empty?
Ron Kruger was coaching Josh Smith and Jason Terry, yeah.
Basically, you know, where were you for all those 5 and 6 seeds you've been getting all those years?
Yeah, but you could say that about a lot of those fan bases. Sometimes the Boston fans, you know, you don't see those fans now anymore. You know, you don't see Dancing Living on a Prayer guy anymore.
And just, you know, I don't want to discredit Atlanta, because what they have done is completely impressive. But look at their 18 win. There's Minnesota, Indiana, Detroit, Philly, Detroit again, Utah. When you get to the playoffs, you're not going to be playing these shitty teams you can pound up, you know.
The one impressive part is that they have a really good record against the Western Conference opponents that supposedly are so much better than the East. So the idea that if, say, Atlanta plays this well all the way through the end and they wind up in the finals, the idea that they're not going to be able to hang with the Western Conference team is silly if you look at their record, because they're playing just as well against the Western Conference teams as they are against the Eastern Conference teams.
Oh, of course. But again, like we said with Golden State, they're hot now. Are they going to remain hot throughout the – what's going to happen? You know, I think eventually you're going to have to start to rest Horford, since he's just coming back from his injury. He's going to have to start taking a day or two off, and what do you do in that case?
You know what it reminds you know what it reminds me of a little bit? I remember when the Nuggets had a winning streak in the middle of Miami's run in 2013. You know, Miami went on a 26-game winning streak. And what happened is, right in the middle of that, in the month of March, the Nuggets went on like a 19-game winning streak, and they cemented themselves to get into the playoffs in the West. But nobody really remembered it, because the Nuggets weren't really on like a national television schedule like the Miami Heat were. And the Hawks are kind of the same way. You know, they don't really have a lot of pressure on them on television, like, oh, here comes the next big game. Like you're saying, like, they don't have like one big opponent after the next. It's more like, oh, the Hawks are playing tonight. You know, the Warriors, I feel like, have a little bit of pressure on them. You know,
the Warriors are the hot, chic team, and Atlanta's just the, well, that's the team nobody's talking about now. Nobody's giving us credit. It's like, no, I'm pretty sure everyone knows who Atlanta is. They haven't changed anything up. They're just happen to be on fire right now.
Yeah, and now here's a couple of stats. The only teams before the All-Star break to have a winning streak of 18 games or more, and here they are. The Hawks this year, the 2009 Boston Celtics, the 1996 Chicago Bulls, the 72-10 team, the 1972 Lakers, who went 69-13, and the 1970 New York Knicks that won the NBA championship. The only team of those four previously that had not won the title was the 2009 Celtics. That was the year Kevin Garnett tore his knee. So I don't want to try to jump the gun and say, do you feel like we could see history repeating itself with the Bulls, Knicks, and Lakers with the Hawks?
I don't think so. I think they're – I don't want to call them a soft team, but what you're going to go up against
a little soft. They're not like a physical team.
You're going to have to run through Cleveland, Chicago, and Washington, and let's even say maybe Miami.
Toronto.
If they're 1 and 2, they won't meet till the finals. So I was more before they hit that.
Okay.
Once you hit the playoffs, like, you know, all the garbage is gone. The East is going to be pretty tough.
Mm-hmm.
With LeBron, Chicago.
Well, Cleveland, Toronto. Cleveland's catching fire. You know, they're at about an 8-game winning streak at this point. Kyrie Irving scored 55 points, which is actually more points than Klay Thompson scored in the game that we were talking about just now. So, you know, Irving's playing great. LeBron looks fresh. He's playing like he's got fresh legs because
LeBron's
he got all that time
fresh.
Off.
Kevin Love looks like he feels like playing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, again, maybe getting rid of Dion was the answer. Well, maybe he was the one who's sort of slowing everybody down.
And the Bulls are just weird. You know, they have they beat the Spurs and the Mavericks back-to-back nights, and then they lose to the Miami Heat. And then they go to Golden State, and they beat Golden State. And then they lose to the L.A. Lakers, a bad team. And it's been very up and down. That's been the entire Bulls season really so far. A lot of things to like, and then they give you something to hate. You know, it's just funny. Very bipolar team.
It's funny. They already, you know, they're 30-19 right now, so it's not like they're doing terrible.
Well, that's what the funny part. They're talking about Tom Thibodeau and is he going to last the season? I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like this, he's the only reason that team is even legitimate.
They just seem to be a team who just plays like, oh, you know what, guys, take a night off. You don't need to play 82. You know, you lose to the bad teams, you beat the good ones. Okay, we beat Golden State. You know what, play sort of half-assed.
So we talked. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, because you know, remember the previous years, his problem. You know, the knock on him was he was a taskmaster, mm-hmm. and he used to wear his team down before the playoffs.
He was a grinder. Yeah.
Now it seems like he's letting them take a day off, and oh well, now they're what are they doing? Losing.
Look at him. They're getting lazy on defense. We're gonna have to get that Thibodeau grind fest again. You know, it's like be careful what you wish for, because if you get that, then you're gonna get a very low scoring team with not a lot of offensive options, because all you're doing is focusing on the defensive end. You know, you got to take the good with the bad, man. And we talked about that from the beginning with Chicago is, okay, they got a lot of offensive pieces now with Mirotic and Gasol. Butler's gotten better shooting the ball. But with the offense comes a lackadaisical nature on the defensive end. You know, it's just the way it is.
You can't have both.
Yeah, the defensive intensity like they had when they had Noah and a lot of those role players in Rose's absence, you cannot duplicate that. It's just something that you kind of walk into and you manage it and it's over. You know, then you go to a new season, you have a brand new team like they have, and you gotta take the pieces as they come. And the pieces that he has is a really good offensive center alongside a good defensive center and a small forward who never misses time, who's blossomed on the offensive end, but whose main strength is on the defensive end. You know, and I think they should play more to those strengths, and I don't feel like they are. You know, I don't know if it's the players tuning out. I don't know if it's Thibodeau kind of easing off a little bit because we're not at the home stretch of the regular season. I'm not sure what it is yet, but Chicago needs to wake up.
It's fun. Imagine if, like, you know, Eric Spoelstra were there. You know, Miami's 20-26. He would have been run out of town if he were in Chicago.
Spoelstra? He might get run out of town in Miami. That team is not doing great.
The team's not doing great, but the fans don't care anymore. They're like, we have our championships.
Well, we were making fun of Atlanta about bandwagon fan. I mean, Miami is the ultimate bandwagon fan. I mean, Jesus. Like, they're not nearly as passionate as I remembered them when Pat Riley was there when Alonzo Mourning. That crowd was hot. These crowds in the American Airlines Center in Miami are just, like, garbage. Like, they don't get into anything. And the only time I saw him get into it at all was when they played Cleveland on Christmas Day. Outside of that, I barely remember anything about the home crowds.
You could say they're the nicest home crowd because they're always cheering for the other team all the time. Fair. And always dressed in their opponent's attire. What a friendly crowd.
We talk about Thibodeau and how it's kind of silly that anybody has them on the hot seat, but then there's one guy that is not only on a hot seat, but he might just damn near get burned by the time you listen to this podcast, and that is Jacques Vaughn of the Orlando Magic. Adam and I had already spoken about how in our team preview for Orlando that he was going to be in a little bit of trouble if they didn't find an identity or if they didn't improve in the win column. In the win column, they've actually improved a tad, but they've gone through a stretch where they've had 7 straight losses, most of them in very ugly fashion. And now there's reports that Jacques Vaughn's days in Orlando are officially numbered.
Which really comes as no surprise. Like,
no.
I know nobody expects them to contend, but when you're like, you know what, I'm going to start Aaron Gordon for a while. Well, let's put Tobias Harris on the bench because why not? I have no plan. He's like, I caught like one Orlando game this week and they just seemed really, they had no clue what they're doing, just sort of running up and down, and that was it.
The lineups were very flimsy, and not necessarily the starting roster, but the way they play them. Like, he would play Oladipo sometimes as the point guard. Then he would play him as an off guard with Elfrid Payton as the point guard. Then he would do some mismatches with Vucevic and Tobias Harris, like you were talking about, and Aaron Gordon, where he would play Gordon at the 4 and play Vucevic at the 5, and then one day he'll play Harris at the 5 and Vucevic at the 4, and then at the 3 he'll play somebody else. And then you got Channing Frye, who, you know, is a good helper for them, and now you're moving around Vucevic and Harris again to try to fit Channing Frye. And it was just a total mess, and they had no, like, clear focus. Like we were just talking about with Chicago, there was no clear focus of what they wanted to do. It was not – I think that they're built to be a defensively minded team with the pieces that they have, but they didn't have a defensive mindset. You know,
I don't know what they are. You could tell me they're going to be an up-and-down running team. I'm like, I could see it. Gordon, Harris – Payton, he could pass. I could see that's an up and down. They're defensive. Oh, I could see it. Gordon, Vujicic. You could say whatever, but they just I'll play this and I'll play. Oh, one thing I want to do, I want to play Oladipo at point guard. Well, that failed. Well, I still want to try that. He still looks horrible as a point guard. Let's keep doing it. Yeah, it's.
Payton's looked better, but he's still struggling, obviously, as a rookie. And Jacques is he was a point guard when he was in college and in the NBA. So there was a guy who was supposed to tutor him, and also Oladipo when he was handling the point in his rookie year. It's supposed to be Jacques Vaughn. It didn't seem to me like either guy got that much better outside of
they haven't gotten better. What you need, if you're a young coach, get that veteran assistant. I look like their assistants are like Wes Unseld Jr. Their player development guy is LaRon Prophet from Maryland in the 90s.
Well, if Jacques goes out, one of these guys is going to be the assistant. Who do you think it's going to be? The interim head coach, at least.
They could just really pick one. But, you know, as for that's a team that's not a bad – if you're a coach, that's a nice little startup project. Mm-hmm. Because Hennigan has put nice pieces around them. They just need somebody to mold them because they all seem to have some sort of talent, I think.
Oh, yeah. Now, Tobias Harris is a restricted free agent. They already paid up to get Vucevic back into the fold. And that was a smart move. Vucevic has been great. Tobias has been great, but not all the time. And he's had some injury problems. So I don't know if they're going to pay up to keep him around, knowing that they might have to save some money for Oladipo. And also maybe Elfrid Payton down the road, who they like. So it's interesting to see what they're going to do with Tobias Harris. I'm not convinced he's going to stay. I think he might get overpaid. Your assistant coaches, like you were mentioning, Wes Unseld Jr., Jay Hernandez, who I think was actually one of the co-stars of the movie SWAT. LaRon Prophet, Brett Gunning, and James Borrego. And I know a lot of these assistant coaches. I have no idea who any of those people are. Rob Hennigan is the general manager. He came from the Oklahoma City Thunder. He took over right after the, you know, Stan and Otis Smith got fired, and then Dwight Howard was traded. It was a total blow up. And he brought in Jacques Vaughn after a bit of a lengthy coaching search. But Jacques came from San Antonio. His only real experience as a head coach was for San Antonio's summer league team. So, do you think sometimes that there are these situations where a GM from kind of one style of play and then an assistant coach from a totally different style can come together and do something special together? Do you think that that's more likely, or do you think this was just an example of it, of taking a chance and not working?
I think it can work. I think it was just more of a chance of Jacques needed more experience as an assistant coach. It just looks like he's just throwing crap at a wall and hope something sticks for a lineup, and and there's no real development of players. You had all this talent, and he, you know, Harris, well, what's with him? Mo Harkless, I thought he was supposed to be good. What happened to him?
Kylo Quinn's up and down.
Kylo Quinn is still on the team. Well, he's decent, but nobody. Andrew Nicholson, oh, he's a little banger. Well, now he's just getting DNPs. Why is that? Nobody knows. There's no development. If you're going to be a coach, you know, okay, your GM could give you the wrong players, but you have to sort of meld them into a way, and you're not doing anything.
Let me give you an example before we get to that. Ryan McDonough is the general manager. You might know him from his Boston days. He is now the general manager of the Phoenix Suns. He took over in 2013. He learned under Danny Ainge, where they had a very slow tempo offense, mainly focused on the defensive end. Jeff Hornacek had been an assistant coach for years in Utah, where they did the flex offense under Jerry Sloan and under Ty Corbin. Well, they come together and they play this really fast tempo with guards, and it seems to be working great. Do you think? And then here's the opposite. You got Danny Ferry, who came from the Spurs, and Mike Budenholzer, who came from the Spurs. They were very familiar with one another, and it took a year for them to figure it out. But it seems like they're starting to have some magic happen, not necessarily the Orlando magic. I'm talking about more of the intangible basketball magic, like success. And, you know, do you think that there's a real rhyme or reason to these general managers and these head coaches, whether it's one guy coming from one place and another guy coming from another place?
No, a lot of it just depends on getting the right guy at the right time.
And the roster, too.
You know, Charlotte would be a perfect example. who's the GM out there? Joe, what a great signing. He got Al Jefferson. That he's a genius. Comes back a year later. Lance Stephenson. It just takes really magic to find. Nothing on Lance, but he just doesn't fit the system, and he's not a leader.
Yes.
He's I believe in the previews, I was like, he's more like Ricky Davis. He's not going to be your go-to guy. And it just – the magic, it just depends on – you just hope something works out, and that's why you stockpile these picks and you get – okay, we have an Aaron Gordon. We don't know what he is. He doesn't know what he is. He just has an incredible motor and hustle. Let's try to develop him into something.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have Jacques Vaughn going,
The only thing that's interesting for Orlando going forward is that, I mean, Vucevic is a complete big. Tobias Harris is a complete big, to the surprise of pretty much everyone, because I don't think people expected him to ascend that fast. Oladipo, Payton, and Aaron Gordon are very raw. Even Oladipo, as good as I think he can be, he still has work to do, a lot of work to do. We obviously know that Payton and Gordon have a ways to go, but I think they almost had it in mind that these guys were going to go forward, but Jacques Vaughn was not going to be the guy that coaches them. I almost thought they were sort of resigned to the fact that they were going to be building for another 2 or 3 years, and that even if Vaughn wasn't around by then. What the only pressure there is that now Rob Hennigan's got to make the right hire the next time around, or it's his ass.
He does, but I don't think you don't hire a coach to be a placeholder.
Mm-hmm.
You sort of will get the young guy. We can mold the coach with the players, and everyone can grow together and have that, you know, the coaches and talking to – they could all be – the coach won't be standoffish with players. He'll be more apt to listen to him if the coach is a younger player, mm-hmm. and more, you know, apt to change and more, you know, – he'll listen. But it's just, yes, this team is incredibly raw, and maybe we're giving Orlando too much talent because – no, they're not a good team.
Mm-hmm.
None of these players, you know, their record is about where they might have overachieved, based to some people, because you're not going to get raw potential isn't going to get you points, which isn't going to get you wins.
Obviously, the Orlando Magic are right now 15-34. They're clearly out of the playoff race. Still not as bad as the completely decrepit New York Knicks and Philadelphia 76ers, who have actually kind of hit a bit of an upswing. The Sixers have won 3 of their last 10 games. The Knicks have won, I think, 4 of their last 5. So things are looking up for those bottom feeder teams in the East, but they're still garbage. The Orlando is better than garbage. But they're not
barely,
but they're not going to be in the playoff race in the Eastern Conference, even though the bottom of the East is not very good. But, the thing is, we do have a bit of an interesting situation with the 8 seeds. Now, let's preface this by saying, I think we're all kind of accepting the fact that the 8 seed is probably going to get absolutely slaughtered by the 1 seed. Even though that didn't happen last year, I don't think history is going to repeat itself. So I want to kind of explain the situation that we have right now. Miami is at 7 right now, 20-26, 6 games under 500. That is – I'm starting with them because – the Bucks are 2 games over 500. I would say they're firmly in the playoffs as long as they don't completely fall off a cliff in the last 2 months. Right now, that eight spot is held by the one that we just mentioned, the Charlotte Hornets at 19-27. Right behind them, a game behind, is the Brooklyn Nets. And then you got the Detroit Pistons, who have obviously suffered from a catastrophic injury involving Brandon Jennings. And then, look who we got.
Who would have thought you'd say that?
Wait, what's that?
Who would have thought you'd say Brandon Jennings?
What a terrible loss.
Yeah.
Man, life throws you curveballs, and Brandon Jennings has definitely thrown one this year. And then you got the Detroit Pistons, like we mentioned, and then we've got your buddies, the Boston Celtics. Even after trading pretty much all of their good players, they're almost kind of sort of still in the playoff hunt.
How are they better with nobody left on their team? I don't understand it.
Well, they've lost 2 in a row, but they won 4 in a row before that.
Yeah, they should be like, I don't know. If you lose, I really, it's unexplainable how they're, you know, good for them. I don't. they're gonna fall apart mysteriously.
Well,
they'll start tanking.
Well, let's play eliminator. And I'll even mention a team we didn't mention yet, but I still kind of have them hanging right there because they're right there with the Boston Celtics in terms of win loss. The Indiana Pacers. Do you think they could get that 8 seed or maybe 7 seed?
If they want it, if Paul George wants to come back, they can easily get it. But I would just say no. Go for, you know, your season's done.
Detroit.
They're done.
You think they're completely done, though? Because you still got Monroe and Drummond inside. And even though they've dropped some games, Stan Van Gundy's still the head coach.
He's still the head coach. They'll put a nice run, but I just don't see them coming over the hump.
You think I'm putting too much stock in Stan Van Gundy? I've heard that a couple of times, that he's actually not that good of a coach. He's just got lucky.
Well, he's turning this team around mysteriously.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think 17-30 is probably what a little better than anyone else thought at this point.
Well, they were on track to be a lot worse than that. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, when they started so bad, like, yeah, I think they might put in an attempt, but no, I think they're going to fall short. Indiana, Boston, they're not going to try.
Okay. Give me your case for gangrene.
No, they're going to play hard, but they're probably just going to go for draft picks again.
Have you seen anything lately out of them that gives you some optimism despite the trades with Jeff Green and such and such? Like maybe Marcus Smart or Kelly Olynyk?
Will what? Kelly Olynyk, who just shoots threes?
Everybody,
the last
shoots
thing they just, you know, he's just a shooting guard now. He doesn't even try to go down low.
Mm-hmm.
Before his injury, Marcus Smart. I'm reading like everyone's like, oh, he'll be good. He's just terrible right now. I'm like, I'd like to see him be good.
He turns the ball over a lot now. His 3-point shooting has been a lot better so far this season than people expected.
He's getting a lot better. I was like, okay, now is his time. It's just maybe I'm just overvaluing him and be like, oh, he's still good. He's still good, but the numbers aren't there for my enthusiasm right now.
What about the Brooklyn Nets?
I still say they're going to turn it around, but I always keep saying that because of the veteran team.
Mirza Teletovic is out for the rest of the season.
Yeah, he's out, but I think Garnett's going to try to will them to like a last, 10-game swing to push them in.
Do you think all that instability involving the rumors that Prokhorov might sell and that they're evaluating Lionel Hollins, do you think that's hurting the team, or do you think they have enough veterans around them for it to just kind of get through it?
I don't think any player cares about who owns the team. As long as they're getting checks, I don't think they care where it comes from. Lionel Hollins, being in jeopardy.
I think the Atlanta Hawks are a great example of that. They don't have an owner.
And nope, they don't seem to care. And L.A. that the Clippers last year, that was only because it was public.
Mm-hmm.
But as for the Bucks were on sale, they were trying to be sold for years, and they're just still playing. Mm-hmm. It's just we want to trade everyone on our team now, and we need to start cutting money. That's the real turmoil, and Hollins somehow crapping out, and I don't know. That team is just a big mystery. How they just really flopped.
I think they're just my opinion with Brooklyn. I think they're just dangerously close to tanking. Like, I don't think they're tanking yet, but I think they're teasing it. Like, there were the rumors there about Brook Lopez with the Thunder. They thought that they would bite on it, and the Thunder asked for too much, so those talks stalled. Then they shut down Deron Williams for a broken rib that may or may not have actually happened, because there were rumors that they were just keeping him healthy so that by the trade deadline they have a fully rested Deron Williams for any team that wants to bite on the rest of his $20 million per year contract. And then you got Jared Jack playing a lot of minutes, which was a bit of a mystery. And Bogdanovich has played okay, but I don't know if he should be starting. It's a team that seems they could be doing better than they are, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I agree. It's just I don't know. They're one of those situations where you're like, I don't have how do you fix them? I don't know. You have the pieces. Well, why is it not working? I don't know.
Well, they're still in salary cap hell because they traded all the draft picks and because of Garnett and Williams and Lopez's contracts. Now, when Garnett retires, which will probably be after this season, it frees up a bit more. But then you got to get rid of Deron Williams. And no one's taking him. That's the problem.
You don't need to get rid of him. You get
yes,
rid of him
you
or Joe
you
Johnson.
You have to get rid of Deron Williams. He is a black hole. He got hot to start the season, and now he's back to what he was at the end of last year when I totally besmirched him.
I'll put it, would you rather get rid of Deron Williams or would rather get rid of Joe Johnson and his $24 million expiring contract? You could get a lot more.
I'll Joe Johnson because he never misses games and he's a shot maker.
He's a shot maker, but if you're looking to get money and assets, the better way you could do it is by giving up Johnson as opposed to hoping somebody will take Williams.
That's a good point, because if you call someone up and say, hey, do you want to make a straight-up trade for Joe Johnson, a team might bite on that despite his contract numbers because he's still a really good player.
Exactly. Give me so-and-so in a first for Joe Johnson.
No one wants Deron Williams.
And yeah, like they're like, well, you want Deron Williams? Well, what else are you going to give us? I really don't want to give you anything or have anything. Click. Hello?
That's probably exactly how Billy King's conversations go. That's pretty accurate. So, and then the Hornets are at 8. They got a winning streak going. I don't remember how long it was, but they were winning more games than they were losing, I would put to put it that way. But then Kemba Walker tore a meniscus in his left knee. He's going to be out for 6 weeks.
He's done. The team's done.
Do you you don't think they can survive that?
Of course not. They were just lucky, I think, to turn their season around at this point. Because you're the main Kemba guy.
Oh, I love Kemba Walker. Yeah.
And what are they going to do without him now? Who's going to be their who's going to be the go-to guy in Charlotte? Who's going to be running the point in Charlotte?
I'll tell
now?
You who it's going to be. It's going to be Lance.
Lance is going to come back as a one, and
he's going to be a one guard. He's going to be a point guard, pretty much. Just like he was when he would play in relief of George Hill in Indiana.
Well, the problem with that team, their draft has just got awful.
Well, that's what we talked about from the beginning, is that their role players, whoever they may be, the rookie, the second-year player, Cody Zeller, the third-year player, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, they had to step up. They had to show something. The only one that's really shown something so far is Cody Zeller. Noah Vonleh has been a no-show. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is a role player at best. And then you think about other guys like Brian Roberts, who's played okay. Jeffrey Taylor, obviously, back from a domestic violence arrest and then got a 24-game suspension. But he's a decent player. But are any of those guys able to fill in for what Kemba was able to do for them for the first 2 months of the season? That's really hard.
If you think Lance is going to do it, I mean, more power to you, but their team is just defensively minded.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody left to score points on that team, I think. And if Lance will average, you know, if he comes back or whenever he's back, where he'll get 15 points, Al will get his 20. After that, you're losing Kemba. He's probably averaging what? I assume
averaging around 23, 22. You're talking about Kemba Walker, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, about 22.
Where are you replacing that with a, you know, PJ Harrison, whom I like, but is young?
Mm-hmm.
You're not getting the points. And you sort of have to hope you win games like 80 to 78.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a defensive rock fight, at least going forward for Charlotte, like it always was, but now it's plainly obvious that that's the way they're going to have to go with him. Let me see. Actually, you know what? I apologize. It's 18.8 points per game right now for him. 4 rebounds and 5 assists. So a decent season so far, but it could be better, you know. But I don't know if they're going to be able to replace that in time. Miami, I don't think they're going to drop completely out of the playoffs. Would you agree?
No, Miami's firmly in.
Well, I wouldn't say firmly. I would say in by a nose. But I, you know, outside of Hassan Whiteside, I just don't see a lot of improvement on that roster. Even though Chris Bosh has played well, Dwayne Wade is out with a hamstring injury, so I don't know how long he's going to be gone.
Injuries are starting with him. He's starting to fade. He was hot in December.
Yeah.
January, not much so. And, okay, Miami's going to fade. Okay, we've talked about Brooklyn might take him over, so you're thinking Detroit, Boston, or Indiana might take over a second team?
I think Detroit's going to find their way in there. I don't know why. I just feel like the Pistons have one more run left in them. I don't know about – I'm not sure about the Pacers. They're going backwards. The Celtics have kind of, from a managerial point, given up. So I don't like that team. The Nets I don't like. And the Hornets, that's where it is. I think it's really between the Hornets and the Pistons. I think that's where the rubber meets the road about who's going to get that last spot. Now, what they do after that, I don't think anyone's going to really care. But that's what the regular season for really meaningless discussions like this. So we were talking a lot about injuries and people who got hurt. So me and Adam are going to just kind of do a little rapid fire here and talk about which one is probably the most impactful to their team. We'll start with one of the ones we just talked about, Kemba Walker. With the let's do this like on a grade level, like a 1 through 10 about impact on the team. Kemba Walker being out for 6 weeks with Charlotte.
Seven.
A 7. That's that. That's me,
too. It'll take them out of contention, but they could still battle back.
Mm-hmm. Dwight Howard being out another week with knee swelling. This is after being out for almost 2 weeks with a knee operation, getting his knee cleaned up.
One.
You really think? I mean, do you think that Howard is basically just kind of ducking low until the regular season ramps up?
I don't know if he's ducking low.
He's pulling a Shaq, mind you.
No, he's probably injured, but it's not affecting the team, really. It's Harden's team, and as long as Harden is still being MVP caliber level.
Yeah, but do you think that they would be moving maybe closer to where Golden State is if Dwight Howard was playing every game instead of resting here and resting there?
Yeah, they could have, but
I would put it at like a three. I'll go a little higher than that because I think they would be a little better if Dwight Howard was playing in these games because the Western Conference, there's no room up in that freaking skyscraper, dude. Everybody is playing great right now. But this one of them was LeBron James, but he's already back. So, you know, he had a wrist injury. They said he might be out several games. 2 days later, he's back. So, Anthony Davis suffered a groin injury after he had a really scary fall against the Nuggets last week. I don't know how long he'll be out. We'll see around the All-Star break if he plays in the All-Star game. It might be just a false alarm. But, I mean, if that's an injury in which – let me put it this way. If Anthony Davis is even out for three games, that's a nine. Because he is the team. I mean, I know they have other players on the team, like most NBA teams do. But he is the star of that team. Without him, they are nothing. I know they beat the Clippers without him, but that they cannot withstand that.
Take a deep breath. You know, it's going to be okay.
Mirza Teletovic, blood clot in his lungs for the Nets.
That's I want to say that's like an eight for them because they don't have any bench and he was playing really well.
And they don't have a lot of shooting either, you know, outside of Bogdanovic and I'm kind of drawing a blank. I don't know any other outside shooters they really have. Maybe Jared Jack? I don't know.
That's a very big loss for them.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's a sneaky tough one. It's 2 weeks potentially for Dwayne Wade with a hamstring.
Five.
Yeah, I think they could survive.
I expect five. No, that's the amount of injuries he's going to have before the end of the season.
Oh, that's the amount of injuries, not on a scale. Not on our
yeah, he's going to just be – that's what his career is. That's what the knock on him is. Like, well, he's done. He's fragile. He's broken. Mm-hmm. And now these injuries are starting to pile up.
Brandon Jennings ruptured Achilles tendon.
That's a 10.
That's a tough one, man. And I can't believe we're even saying this because we were saying at the beginning of the year, we don't even know if Brandon Jennings was going to be on the team. But when Josh Smith got let go, Brandon Jennings took over that team. He said, this is my team. He had a game where he had 21 assists, which, I mean, I never thought he would pull that off in a game. And it seemed like he was buying into what Stan Van Gundy was selling. And when a really good player is in tune with the coach, kind of like what's going on with the Atlanta Hawks starting roster, when they start buying into what the coach is doing and they're in sync, it makes for great stuff. And Jennings was playing great. He really, really was. His numbers were at a career pace on assists and field goal percentage. And then this. It's like, damn it, you know?
Yeah, and that's a tough injury to bounce back from quick, too.
Yeah, and that
– even it's not like ACL surgery, which is like, oh, whatever. Everybody has ACL surgery these days. This is – ooh, it's a tough one.
It's what ended Isaiah Thomas's career. And another guy who's about to be retiring pretty soon suffered this injury 2 years ago, and he is out with a torn rotator cuff, and that is Kobe Bryant. Here's my problem, though, with the you know what? Give me your impact grade, and I'll tell you why mine is.
The impact grade is on the court, it's a 1, but off the court, it's a 10 because that was the only thing people were going to see. Mm-hmm. People aren't going to games to see that team. They just wanted to see Kobe, especially if they're on the road. Now, they're in full tank mode. They need to be in the top five in order to keep their pick this year, next year.
That's exactly what I was going to be saying, is that on the court, you know, for the Lakers were losing anyway. Were they competitive in some more of the games than you thought because of Kobe? Sure. But I don't know if Kobe's presence was making them any better. In fact, I think it was making them worse because Kobe was taking a lot of shots away and the players weren't really stepping up anyway. So without Kobe, now the players have to step up. And I'm not saying that they're better without him, but what I'm saying is that his impact is minimal.
Well, the impact's minimum because now that Kobe's gone, you have 25 shots that are freed up now.
Mm-hmm. And trust me, there are some guys on that team that want to take those.
Oh, Nick Young will try to take all 25. But
Swaggy V and IGGY. That team is rough. I can't even remember too many of the guys. Ryan Kelly is on that team, but he just got sent down to the D League. They're playing a lot more Jordan Clarkson, who was one of their draft picks. Julius Randle, obviously, he's out for the entire year with a broken leg. I don't really know too many people that are going to who's going to take the shot attempts there, you know, in Kobe's absence. Maybe Jordan Hill, maybe Xavier Henry or Wesley Jaws. I really don't know, but it's a mess of a team anyway. I just don't know how much worse they would have been if Kobe had played the whole year anyway. I think they'd have been just as bad.
They would have been just as bad, but it's always entertaining to watch just Kobe like not care about. Kobe doesn't care about draft picks.
Yeah.
Kobe just wants his points, and without that, what's the point of even watching? Because they're going to be on national TV like every game since they picked these games like 2 years in advance.
Well, did you hear the story about the Knicks that ESPN has pulled all the Knicks games? So, because they have an option there where they can go to an alternative game.
Thankfully.
and they exercise that with all the Knicks games. They basically dumped them all.
I'm so glad. It's just like there's nothing worse than like watching like, you know, ESPN Monday Night Football where you're just stuck watching shitty teams because you thought they might be decent at the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
At least here we don't have to suffer through that.
Well, we see that. That was the problem for quite a long time with the NFL, you know, with the Monday Night Football and also with the Thursday Night Football. They would go through that all the time where they would have to schedule these two opponents based on the perception of what they were the previous season, and then it just doesn't work out. The thing about the Lakers and the Knicks that bothers me, everyone knew they were going to be bad. Everyone knew. And you still trot them out on fucking national television. That bothers me.
I don't think anyone really thought they'd be as terrible as they are.
Mm.
I don't think anyone think they'd be worst. Okay, Minnesota, but they
well,
just got
Phil
this.
Jackson taking over New York gave them some optimism, but not enough optimism to have 7 or 8 nationally televised games. I'm sorry.
No, but thankfully we're spared from, you know, now we get maybe a Toronto game or two we wouldn't have gotten, or a Phoenix game.
Yeah, well, Friday we're getting a Clippers at the Raptors game on ESPN. That's a great game, but let me tell you something. Guess who's going to be playing that same night? The Warriors are going to Atlanta to play the Hawks. Maybe the best game of the year this year. So why don't we just, you know, it's almost like wrestling. I wish we would just rebook it on the fly. And just say, hey, I know you have airtime for this game, but why don't we switch it to this game? Now, obviously, with NBA TV and all the other new online availabilities, you don't necessarily have to. It's not like they go dark. It's not like you're never going to watch a highlight of this game because it's not on ESPN. We're not that stupid. But wouldn't it be cool if they just switched it to Golden State at Atlanta because of how special that game might be?
Yeah, but somebody else might have that game, and you can't just knock them off because
yeah,
we're
CSN,
ESPN.
CSN Bay is going to be covering the game.
Yeah, you know, it's a local game, so Atlanta and...
Well, that's the away TV. The home TV is TSOH. So, whichever
one
that is.
I have no idea what TSOH is.
That's the abbreviation for it on the schedule. I don't know exactly. Maybe
I thought it was like, you know, Fox Sports Southeast.
Yeah, one of the Fox ones.
What it
you know,
used
it's,
to be, but
it's kind of like the Pelicans when they were the Hornets. They had a cock. They were the only ones that had one with Cox cable instead of Fox. Well, when Benson took over, he had an investment in the local sports station on Fox anyway. He he went ahead and made a contract with Fox Sports so that they can get in on that money like almost all of the regional channels do from city to city, is that they're all on Fox. They all have like a Fox regional partnership for their television games. So, you know, that's the situation there with Golden State and Atlanta. I just wish that game was on national TV, because that's the game everybody's going to be wanting to see instead of the ones that the ESPN is going to force feed us. Another injury I want to mention, even though it was early in the year, Jabari Parker with the Bucks. How big of a loss was that one?
Really, I'd say a 7.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was developing nicely, and now that's going to sort of set him back a bit.
Yeah, it's a tough one, because I don't think – they're two games over 500 still, because – and I can't believe I'm even saying this, but Jason Kidd has done a great job coaching that team. But – I think they'd be even better if Parker hadn't gotten hurt, you know.
Yeah, agreed. And
they would be firmly – I mean, I think they're firmly in the playoffs anyway, but I think they would actually have some room to move up. Like, they might actually even fight for – they would have almost been capable of fighting for, like, a 5 seed or a 4.
I don't know.
Now they're definitely stuck at 6, you know.
And with Atlanta being as hot as they are, I don't think they would have topped, you know, Chicago, Washington, Cleveland, or Toronto.
Yeah, Washington's going to make their run. Cleveland, like we predicted, has made their run. Toronto has won 5 games in a row since DeRozan came back.
I'll put the one thing about Washington. Washington's sort of a sleeper team right now. Nobody's really talking about them.
They're in a lull right now.
They're like, sort of in a lull,
but that's because
but
they're on a road trip. You always drop games on a road trip.
But they're just, you know, they're sitting pretty in third place. They're not really, you know, getting the headlines, getting the attention. But they're quietly going about their business.
Great defensive team. Probably the – outside of Atlanta, probably the best defensive team in the Eastern Conference. You know, the only other one who's got a really good defense is Indiana, and they might not even make the playoffs. So
yeah.
they're going to be the danger team when it comes to, like, you know, we talked about these low-scoring games in the playoffs where things get really tight. Well, I think that's a situation where the Wizards can aptly handle themselves because of the fact that they're going to be able to get stops and the other teams won't. You know, Chicago's the wild card there, but we already discussed the reasons why we're not as confident in them on the defensive end as we were in previous years. The All-Star game is set. That's going to be at Madison Square Garden in about, I think about 2 weeks. It'll be about a Saturday, maybe the Saturday after the one that's coming up. And so we have our starters. The starters we had are, I believe, Steph Curry. This is on the Western Conference side. Steph Curry, Blake Griffin, Kobe Bryant, who obviously can't play, Anthony Davis, and Marc Gasol. The starters for the Eastern Conference were LeBron James, Pau Gasol. I'm trying to remember the other one. There's one guy I'm missing. Who was it? Was it Wade?
For the starters?
Yeah, for the starters. No, Wade lost out his spot. This was the fan vote.
Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, Kyle Lowry is one. That was the one I was forgetting about. Then John Wall, and then you got LeBron James, and then you got Pau Gasol. And there's one more guy.
Carmelo.
Yeah, Carmelo Anthony with the New York Knicks. But now we've got our choices for the All-Star team, you know, including the reserves. So we're going to just pick our 12, and, you know, I'll go first with mine. You know what? I'll do this. I'll pick mine, and we'll see what you have and if we agree. East, LeBron James.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Starters, I agree with all.
You agree
all
with
5.
Kyle Lowry, John Wall, Carmelo. You know, I actually was a little bit of at a disagreement with Carmelo Anthony. I don't think he should be on the team.
Because what? The team's so bad? He's not bad.
Yeah, but
it's not his fault everyone else in the court
sucks. He's scoring a lot of points, but they're not winning games.
Yeah, but it's not his. It's not a. He can't will them to win. You can't will that god awful team to do anything. It's not his fault. No, I firmly put him in.
You know, I actually left him out. So that's the one we disagree with.
I had Horford over Gasol.
You had Horford over Gasol, so you didn't have Pau Gasol in at all.
No, I have him as my, you know, as the bench. Okay. So, well, I was just saying for starters,
I
differed.
You have Al Horford. Okay. Nikola Vucevic.
I had him in as my wild card pick as well.
But do you have him in your 12?
Yeah.
You do? Okay.
He was number 12.
Okay. He was the last
and
guy
I thought you were going to tear me apart for picking him at 12.
No,
how could you?
They had snubs, that was one of the – they didn't say they had a lot of snubs in the East, and they really weren't, but Vucevic was one. That was one where I could have made a case. I mean, he's got 19 points and 11 rebounds per game. I mean, if that's Blake Griffin's numbers.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you can't – that's hard. You had Pau Gasol in, you said.
Correct.
John Wall, obviously. Kyle Lowry, obviously. Kyrie Irving.
I have him in.
I have him in, too. Kyle Korver.
Nope.
I have Kyle Korver in. For me, with the Hawks players, the ones that got put into the All-Star game were Jeff Teague, Paul Millsap, and Al Horford. My three were Teague, Millsap, and Korver.
I don't have Teague in it either.
Well, I have Teague. You don't have Teague?
Teague, I have for the injury replacement, you know, my number 13, I put Brandon Knight and then Jeff Teague sort of as 1 and 1A.
How could you do that?
You gotta throw some bucks some love.
Steve Willie. Yeah, Brandon Knight's playing okay. All right, moving on. Jimmy Butler.
Jimmy Butler I have in.
Okay. Kemba Walker.
Nope.
I got Kemba Walker in.
Of course you did.
Of course I did.
Surprised you don't have him starting.
Yeah, Chris Cristobal, you owe me one here. Chris Bosh.
I have Bosh in and I have Wade.
Bosh has played well.
Bosh has just been everything as expected. Wade, he's, you know, faltering now, but
when he plays, he delivers.
Wade, I think it's just sort of my benefit of the doubt pick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, let's just put him in. I didn't have him. He was number 11 on my list.
Yeah, I had Wade out. I mean, and not totally against him. I mean, he's been good, but I just feel like I just want to reward a couple of other guys that might deserve a little more credit is the way I look at it. So this is my 12 in the East. I'll do mine first. LeBron, Lowry, John Wall, Vucevic, Pau Gasol, Jimmy Butler, Kemba, Bosh, Teague, Millsap, Korver, Kyrie Irving. What was yours?
Wall, Lowry, LeBron, Melo, Horford. You didn't have Melo in there, did you?
No Melo.
Oh.
You can't play on a team that bad and make the All-Star team. Sorry. This ain't Major League Baseball.
I got nothing. That's where we differ, really. Millsap, Irving, Bosh, Gasol.
I have Korver instead of Horford. And you have Wade instead of Teague, I think?
Teague or Knight.
Yeah, and Walker you don't have at all.
No.
What about, here's my wild cards that didn't make it. Drummond. Derrick Rose, DeMar DeRozan.
DeRozan didn't play enough games. Derrick Rose really hasn't been all-star caliber.
Mm-hmm.
And Drummond, you can make a case for him, but,
Do you think the fact that Greg Monroe's rebounding numbers have been so good that it sort of overshadows Drummond sometimes? Even though Drummond has been, like, fifth in the league in rebounding.
No, they're not taken away from each other. I put Nikola over both of them.
I love Nikola Vucevic, man. He earned the money he's making. I'll put it that way. Okay, the Western Conference. Now this is hard. We'll do the same way. I say one, see if you agree.
This wasn't as hard. Like I thought it would
be
hard.
For me, it was tough.
But I'm like, when it came down to it, was just like I didn't have as I. It wasn't as hard as I thought it would be.
Steph Curry.
Curry, Kobe.
You had Kobe Bryant in.
Yeah, because I knew he was going to be voted in.
I had Kobe.
I knew. Well, he was still scoring 27 points a game, so.
Yeah, but that was on a high number of shot attempts, and the team.
Yeah.
And just like Carmelo, it was the same plea I had with Carmelo. Even if you're getting a lot of numbers on a really bad team, I still don't know if you deserve it. You know, even though that's not how the All-Star game works. The All-Star game is about getting stars, and Carmelo and
exactly.
Kobe stars, and I get that. But
Carmelo's hosting it, and then Kobe's the number one guy in the league.
For
so.
My personal All-Star team, no Kobe. No soup for you. No soup for
all me. Right. Who did you have as your starters then?
Well, I didn't really have – I didn't do it as okay. starters, but you know what? I'll do it that way anyway. Curry, James Harden, Blake Griffin, mm-hmm. Anthony Davis.
Of course.
Instead of Marc Gasol, I had LaMarcus Aldridge.
I have Gasol.
You have Gasol. Okay, but LaMarcus Aldridge is in your 12.
Yes.
So is James Harden.
So is James Harden. James Harden I had starting.
Okay, you had starting anyway. Blake Griffin.
Blake Griffin starting, Anthony Davis starting, Curry starting. I have Klay Thompson.
Of course. I could not take him off. And it had nothing. It wasn't necessarily the 37-point quarter, 52-point game. It was more than that.
No, I did this, you know, I've been gone for 2 weeks and then had spotty trying to catch up. So this was just over the season. Mm-hmm. DeMarcus.
DeMarcus Boogie Cousins, who's now filling in for the injured Kobe Bryant, I believe.
Yup, I don't know how he didn't make it in the first go around. That's
how
a travesty.
How did Damian Lillard not make it?
That's I don't know either.
Oddly to me.
I have him in.
Yeah, I have him in too.
Kobe.
Chris Paul.
Nope.
You didn't have Chris Paul in the All-Star game?
Chris Paul was going to be my Kobe replacement.
Oh my God, you got to be kidding me.
It came down to Duncan sort of got the nod for a star. Does he deserve it? No.
No, but what I'm saying is, like, your 12, the 12 that you would pick, would you pick Chris Paul?
No, because I put Tim Duncan over him, and then I have Westbrook over him.
God, you're so old. No, man, Chris Paul
should be in, but somebody has to get cut out. Who are you cutting out? Lillard?
Why?
Lillard or Westbrook?
People. Oh, Russell Westbrook. Did you have him in?
Yeah.
Kevin Durant?
No.
I had Kevin Durant in anyway because he's still one of the best players in the league. Even with the injuries, he's still one of the best players in the league.
He is, but you didn't. People should be rewarded for playing all the games.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't.
Kobe's taking a lot of time off. So was Carmelo.
Carmelo didn't take off that much time.
He came back. It's called tank time. He took
it. Yeah.
He should have worn a tank top. Here's the guys I had to cut, and we might talk about them a little bit. Kawhi Leonard.
Nope.
Ty Lawson, who actually just got recently arrested for drunk driving.
Nope.
No. You need to take a taxi, Ty, if you want to get there. Isaiah Thomas for the Phoenix Suns.
He's not even starting on his team.
Yeah, but he's such a spark plug. Like every time I watch the Suns, Isaiah Thomas is making plays.
Then why won't you put Dragic in?
I like Isaiah Thomas a little more.
Okay, but
the smaller the player, the more I like him.
They weren't even like registering. Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook are the two. That was the one I had to think about.
What about Monte Ellis?
No, because there were people. Klay deserved it over him.
He's had a great year, though. He's pretty much the leader scoring wise on that team. He carries the team more than Nowitzki does, almost.
Yeah,
Nowitzki's become a spot shooter.
Well, because he can because of Chandler. Mm-hmm. Chandler's allowed him the ability just to free up
and go outside, play Euros.
Play Euro and sort of rest a little bit as opposed to having to bang all the time.
Dwight Howard.
Nah.
I agree. Gordon Hayward. Great year, though.
He might be my, we'll get this into like a week or two, but our all underrated team. I think he might be the leader of them.
He might be the leader of the underrated. Yeah, his hair's a little wacky, though.
He shaved the
sideburns. Like, he shaved his entire side, and now he just got, like, a mop hair. Look, it's very...
That is the European style now.
It's very weird. You must have seen a lot of those in Finland. Here's one guy I really wish I could have made a case for. Maybe he might sneak in if there's a couple injuries that pop up. Draymond Green for the Warriors.
No, I don't... He's a nice story right now, but... No, if
so, you're telling me
a lot of injuries.
So you're telling me we almost had four Atlanta Hawks in the Eastern Conference, and we only have two Warriors in the West.
Because the two Warriors are pretty much the team right now,
and the West is really deep. But I could have at least one more, you know.
But Draymond Green, he's more of just a glue guy, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I don't see him as the, you know. They're all putting up numbers in Atlanta. There is no superstar. In Golden State, you have two superstars. Nobody's voting Andrew Bogut in his 12 games.
And not only that, one's a great assist guy. The other's a good rebounder. and they're the best shooters probably in the league, and they're both guards. So how do you defend both guys at the same time? It's impossible. You have to let one get hot and just hope you could shut down the other.
Pretty much. You just have to pick one guy to defeat, because, again, Draymond Green, let's let in his 11 points and 8 rebounds.
Yeah, but he gets triple-doubles.
He fills up the stat sheet, but it's Curry and Thompson's team.
It's like the case for Lance Stephenson last year when he was with Indiana, because it was almost a similar case to Draymond Green. You know, he wasn't getting like super stats, but he was getting a triple double here and there, and he was a playmaker for them. You know, and he's also got that intangible to him of like Lance being a playmaker who does a lot of stupid things, whereas Draymond Green is a playmaker who's a great teammate.
He's like how Kurilenko was in his prime. He's doing everything, but nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing is. I'm not. No. No. Take that garbage
out of
here. Sound
like my dad. No.
I'm not buying this argument.
Last one, DeAndre Jordan for the Clippers.
No.
His rebounding numbers are sky high. I think he's still leading the league in rebounding.
His numbers up there, but. Again, in order to put him in, you have to then take somebody off, and I can't take out anyone. As it is, you're already chastising me for leaving Chris Paul off and putting Westbrook in.
Well, I would put both of them in, but I would have to cut out somebody, you know.
Yeah, you'd have to cut out somebody, but who are you going to put in to put these people in, put these names in?
Duncan goes, please. I mean, his Duncan, numbers are pedestrian. Yeah.
Okay, then put Chris Paul. Yes, DeAndre is leading at 13.4. Number two, Drummond, DeMarcus, Zach Randolph, and Tyson Chandler round out the top
That's
five.
Another guy, Z-Bo. Him or Mike Conley. You think they could have made a case?
Conley sort of injured and too many guards ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you can't have the team of 12 guards, and he's just not... I don't know.
The West is tough. The West to me is tough. There's a lot of good players.
The West is tough. There's good, but it was just like it comes down to like, okay, you're good, but you're not going to – I'm not knocking anybody off for you.
Yeah, and it's – and also, you know, we got Kobe who's hurt. But then LaMarcus Aldridge, he breaks his thumb, and guess what he says? He says, oh, no, I'm still going to play. I'm going to hold off my my thumb surgery. It also helps the fact that he's in the last year of his contract.
Exactly.
Nobody wants to shut down their season when they're trying to play for a new deal.
Well, you don't want to shut down your season, especially if you're Portland, because they're sort of floundering right now. And
they've hit a snag. Even with LaMarcus back, they've hit a snag.
They're the 4 seed, but they're only 5 games above the 8 seed.
And let me tell you, the Clippers, I know they lost, they just lost the game to the Pelicans, but the Clippers are getting a little better.
Clippers are another story for another day. I can't figure them out either.
That'll be another story for another day, because we're probably going to be wrapping this up about now. We're probably also going to be talking on our next episode about Hassan Whiteside, who's become sort of a national sensation with his performances with the Miami Heat, along with D-League call-ups over the years. We might delve into a little bit more of the All-Star game, like the Slam Dunk Contest, which has 4 guys, and those 4 are Antetokounmpo, Oladipo, Zach LaVine, and Mason Plumlee. And then you got a 3-point shooting contest I think a lot of people are going to be interested in. And then you got the Rising Stars Challenge, and this time they're going to redo it, where it's the U.S. versus the world roster. I think those are going to be some pretty cool topics to talk about, but we're going to be saving those for next time. Until then, you have anything to try to leave people with as you come back to the States from Finland?
Nope, it's good to be back, and this is, you know... This is the rare time where I think more people are looking more forward to the 3-point contest than the dunk contest.
Well, I think we'll talk about this on the next one, but I think it speaks more to the change in the nature of the game itself.
It's just bizarro world.
It's weird. It's like, I don't want to see all these ridiculous circus dunks. I want to see these guys make jump shots. But on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. We're going to be catching y'all on the bounce, guys. See you later.